Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Between July of 2021 and this March, school districts in 26 states banned or opened investigations into more than 1,000 books. That's according to a PEN America report. Many of those books explore LGBTQ themes. Now, 100 years ago, authors were struggling for the right to put such stories on paper in the first place. Octavio Gonzalez, associate professor of English and creative writing at Wellesley College, teaches a popular course about what's called sapphic literature from that area. And in this installment of Brilliant Boston, he's here to help us apply the lessons of a century ago to today. Octavio, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you surprised by these pushes that we're seeing to ban books today?
Not really. I feel like there's always a backlash to progress in any civil rights context. And, you know, books have always been the target of repressive ideologies.
And, you know, as an academic who's done research, where do you think that comes from?
I think a lot of it is fear, the fear of the unknown. And I think in particular, I think gender scares people. I think gender is a very repressive kind of social division that if it's not adhered to in terms of the binary, people get a little nervous. And that's something that I think is persistent over time.
You know, I was going to ask you a different question, but in listening to you talk about that and you talk about the fear, it feels like we may be, though, and not unique in this, like one moment of many moments where there's a tension between the fear and also curiosity and hunger to know more, which feels like the push me, pull you of progress forward and return back. You're nodding. Does that track with what you've learned?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't think that history is linear. I think there is this push and pull, as you say. And sometimes I'm teaching this class. It's really interesting how sometimes in the 1920s, you had a lot more social freedoms than you have in the 1950s. Ironically, even though it's, you know, further along in terms of the arc of modernity.
So give us an example, because that's intriguing. So what was more freedom in the 1920s than the 1950s?
So, for example, you had drag ball culture, which was very vibrant in the 1920s. The Harlem Renaissance, the Roaring Twenties, that context of the Jazz Age was very, very free in terms of gender norms being loosened up. And we all know about, you know, the flapper, the new woman, you had the new Negro in terms of the Harlem Renaissance. And so you have a lot of these, this excitement and ferment that, again, really kind of died down when society became a little bit more conservative, especially after the war, where you have a return to more traditional gender roles. A great example of this would be Dior's New Look, where you have a much more traditional silhouette, for example, in terms of fashion for women than the flapper look in the 20s.
Interesting. We're talking with Octavio Gonzalez, who's an associate professor of English and creative writing at Wellesley College. I want to dive now into this course of yours that's so popular, because I think there are lessons there really for the moment that we're in. And it is called Sapphic Modernism. So briefly, let's just get some words done here, right? So modernism is like a specific time period, right?
Yes. Generally, it's considered from as early as 1890 to basically the Second World War. And the aftermath of that war is ushers in a new global dispensation dominated by the U.S., which is usually considered postmodern or postcolonial if you're looking at it from the history of colonialism.
Okay, so modern, quote-unquote, is 1890s to post-World War II.
Pretty much, yeah, in terms of literature at least.
Okay, and then there's this idea of sapphic literature. Tell us what that is.
Sure. Well, sapphic, you know, echoing the great poet Sappho, who was considered the 10th muse. So she's a very, very popular poet, and she's also an inspiring figure for a lot of women who loved other women. And for that reason, sapphic became this this term that was applied by women for women who loved other women. And so it's very specific, as opposed to, say, a term like gay or queer, or more medicalized terms like homosexual. So sapphic has this kind of traditional cultural resonance that's very much an in-group kind of resonance.
So it's fascinating. I learned in preparing to talk with you that actually we have only like one poem, whole poem from Sappho, and then lots of little fragments. How can someone where so little of their complete work is left have had so much influence? It's 2022, and you've named a course after her.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of astonishing how important that poetry was and how much she wrote about love. Love between women and also, you know, heterosexual love, we would call it today. And it was just very inspiring. And so that inspiration, I think, carries through the centuries. And she, you know, she's been translated time and time again. Anne Carson has a wonderful new translation where she leaves all the fragments on the page with brackets. It's quite beautiful. It's almost like an archaeology of her poems. And sometimes, you know, the fragments are more interesting in some ways than the finished poem might be because it allows you to imagine.
To fill in the
this time. Yeah, this ancient time. Yeah.
So you offer this course, and students at Wellesley really, really want to take this course. What's the attraction and appeal for students?
Well, I think a lot of students don't necessarily get a lot of LGBTQ curriculum at the high school level, but they are obviously very much, you know, plugged into LGBTQ culture, but not necessarily in an academic context. I think they really crave that academic understanding of these subjects that they're very familiar with, for example. And they also don't necessarily know a lot of the older literature. And since I study modernism, you know, early to mid 20th century, a lot of them haven't read a lot of these books, although they've heard of them, right? The Well of Loneliness being one of the major ones that most people have heard about.
And we'll pick up on that one in a little bit. Actually, let's do it right now. I think we have a reading. So the Well of Loneliness is by Radcliffe Hall. And we have a reading from it that you brought. And I'm going to invite you to do that.
Sure. Just before I start, so Stephen Gordon is the protagonist of The Well of Loneliness. Stephen uses she, her pronouns, although the name is Stephen. And this is in the 20s in Paris after the First World War. Stephen is at a Parisian or nightclub and with her girlfriend. And this is a callback. This scene happens later in the novel, and it's a callback to an earlier scene when Stephen was younger. Stephen used to go fox hunting with her father and in England. And there was this moment earlier in the novel where she is hunting this fox, and she sees the fox terrified of her. And she sees this. It's a very interesting moment of recognition because Stephen grew up being gender nonconformist and always feeling persecuted because she didn't really fit in terms of the gender binary. So that's the background. A youth passed with a friend, and the couple were blocked by the press of dancers in front of her table. He bent forward, this youth, until his face was almost on a level with Stephen's, a gray, drug-marred face with a mouth that trembled incessantly. "Ma sœur," he whispered. For a moment, she wanted to strike that face with her naked fist to obliterate it. Then all of a sudden, she perceived his eyes, and the memory came of a hapless creature, distracted, bleeding from bursting lungs, hopelessly pursued, glancing this way then that, as though looking for something, some refuge, some hope, and the thought, it's looking for God who made it. Stephen shivered and stared at her tightly clenched hands. The nails whitened her flesh. "Mon frère," she muttered.
Why is this text an important one to teach your students? And let me backtrack just to remind folks. We're speaking with Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Wellesley College, Tavio Gonzalez, who teaches a very popular course on Sapphic literature in this era from 1890 to really post-World War II. What's the connection for students today, students in this moment where 26 states are banning books?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that this historical literature is like, you know, is so so much more, you know, reflective of a repressive era. And you think that we're so much more beyond it, that we have much more acceptance and understandings of non-binary individuals, of same-sex love. But, you know, a lot of my students say it's actually not that different, that you do have a lot of closeting, a lot of persecution, or at least ostracism of young people because of their gender or sexual orientation. And so I think they really resonate with these older accounts. And as I said earlier, some accounts are actually quite liberatory. This is not one of them, obviously.
So I'm curious, let's talk about some of the other material that you've taught. You brought a couple of examples. We just heard one, but there's also one from Gertrude Stein. And we found some tape of Stein reading from her poem, If I Told Him, a Completed Portrait of Picasso. So let's just get some Gertrude Stein in Stein's voice.
If I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Would he like it? Would he like it? If Napoleon, if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon, would he like it if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon?
So it's a striking piece because I almost feel like she's running ahead of me to something I can't follow. And it's an unusual voice, I think, to our ears now. Mm-hmm. And yet situate Gertrude Stein for us in this literature and what we need to know and understand.
So she is in some ways a titan in modernism in particular. So she was very good friends with Picasso, and she actually made her name not as a writer, but as a salonnière. So she had this famous salon to which Picasso and Matisse came.
She was in France, right?
She's in France, in Paris, yeah. And so she actually came there much earlier than a lot of the other American writers like Hemingway, but she got to know all of them. And so she's a great example of a woman who was gay by our terms, but was really plugged into the modernist culture of her time. And yet she was also not very popular in terms of her writings because a lot of it was very experimental, very modernist in our terms. Although she became much more accessible when she wrote the so-called autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, which was her lifelong partner. And that's a very interesting and queer understanding of
Yeah, this was
text.
Like a complex math problem. When I read you talking about this, the queering of this story. So it was sort of like A equals B equals C. So walk us through that.
Yeah, so her, as I mentioned, her life partner is Alice B. Toklas.
Okay.
And the most successful commercially book that Gertrude Stein published is called The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, which is in Alice B. Toklas's voice, but it was written by Stein. And it's in the first person. So it's all and it's all about Gertrude Stein.
So she's writing, I mean, got to get my brain around this. She's writing essentially about herself.
Yes.
In a book that is purportedly about her partner.
Right.
In her partner's voice.
Yes.
But actually back on her.
Yes, exactly.
And this is the one that really broke through.
Yes, it's very accessible. It's very kind of like The Wall of Loneliness. It's a very, you know, straightforward, non-experimental voice. And so people say that it actually did reflect Alice B. Toklas's voice. And so it's an interesting kind of form of ventriloquism. And obviously they were together for many, many years. And so I believe it. I believe that it was a natural understanding. And Stein was a genius in many ways. Although, again, a lot of her work is very abstruse and hard to parse. A lot of, as we heard, it's very poetic, even though she's mostly writing in prose. And so this is her most accessible narrative.
So it's fascinating to me that we're speaking with Tavio Gonzalez, who's an associate professor of English and creative writing at Wellesley College. In this edition of Brilliant Boston, you know, you titled the course Sapphic Literature. We talked about that earlier in this conversation, this women who love women. One of the things that for both Sydney, the producer, and me that resonated was there's this new show, A League of Their Own, which is on Amazon Prime. It's a remake of a 1992 film by the same name. I'm going to give you we don't have a ton of time. I'm going to give you a little sound when several of the characters, the women characters, meet each other while they're trying to try out for women's professional baseball during World War II.
Hey! Hey, you! Are you following us?
No. I was just looking at this wall, it's sturdy, it's a good one.
No, you're clearly going to tryout. You can't follow us. We're not here to help the competition.
She doesn't look like that much competition.
So that introduces these three characters, Joe DeLuca, played by Melanie Field, Abby Jacobson plays Carson Shaw, the wall, and Darcy Carden as Greta Gill. And it explores not only the story of baseball that didn't get told the first time around, but also women. Mm-hmm. And women's relationships with each other, love for each other, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Is this some kind of new storytelling for us, or is this 1920s, 1930s brought to Amazon?
It's interesting. So I actually just binged that show on Sydney's recommendation. It was incredible. It was a wonderful experience, and I think it's both. It's both a callback to the 1940s during the Second World War, where when women had a lot more social freedoms And so they were able to have these professional leagues. But also, it kind of improves upon that because, it, as you know, the show also follows a black woman who's also sapphic, so to speak. And so the show is, in some ways, has two protagonists, one white and one black.
Yeah.
Whereas the film does not really explore the same-sex content at all and has very little to say about race and Jim Crow of the era.
It's got about 10 seconds. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's an interesting modernization of that era and that story. And I think it's very inclusive and very beautiful for that reason.
Do you think it's something that you could work into your class in the future?
Absolutely.
Ah, fantastic. I'm only through at 3 episodes myself, so I'll keep watching. So Octavio Gonzalez is an associate professor of English and creative writing at Wellesley College, has a course on sapphic modernism, which is wildly popular there. We were happy to have you here as part of Brilliant Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.